Good morning. This is Word Made Flesh, the radio ministry of Neighbors of Hope. We'll share struggles and triumphs and how through the Word, everyone can experience the loving and healing reality of Christ's compassion. Now here's the Neighbors of Hope Executive Director, Pastor Stephen Palmer, with this week's Word.
Well, good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Word Made Flesh. How are you doing?
Good.
Have we recovered from our conversation before we went on the air? To our listening audience, we had quite a deep theological conversation about things that we're not even going to talk about for this edition of Word Made Flesh. But it was a nice prelude. There may be some relationship, but today we opted, in our conversation as of late, we've been speaking a lot about character formation. And we've alluded to how many times, Jesus has all these banquets he attends throughout the gospel narratives, and how they reflect invitations to our character transformation. And so today I thought, as we wrapped up our character study, that we would look at one of those banquets, and it happens to be a wedding banquet that comes out of the second chapter of John's Gospel, the wedding at Cana, where he turns water into wine. All right, so if I could have somebody read from that chapter 2 of John's Gospel about this little pericope, this narrative, I'd certainly appreciate it. Eric, you want to handle that?
Sure. The wedding at Cana. The next day there was a wedding celebration in the village of Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples were also invited to the celebration. The wine supply ran out during the festivities. So Jesus' mother told him, "They have no more wine." "Dear one, that's not our problem," Jesus replied. "My time has not yet come." But his mother told the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Standing nearby were 6 stone water jars, used for Jewish ceremonial washing. Each could hold 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus told the servants, "Fill the jars with water." When the jars had been filled, he said, "Now dip some out and take it to the master of ceremonies." So the servants followed his instructions. When the master of ceremonies tasted the water that was now wine, not knowing where it had come from, though of course the servants knew, he called the bridegroom over. "A host always serves the best wine first," he said. "Then when everyone has had a lot to drink, he brings out the less expensive wine. But you have kept the best until now." This miraculous sign at Cana in Galilee was the first time Jesus revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. After the wedding, he went to Capernaum for a few days with his mother, his brother, and his disciples.
All right. Yeah, we know, we've all heard, there are several commentaries. There's several things going on in this little pericope. There have been infamous books, sermons, and comments made about. So, obviously we can't cover all those. All right. But let's just start with what jumps out at you.
I think a big one in this that speaks to me is value. And kind of the other banquet stories in the gospel, you see a lot of value in social status, where Jesus will say, "Hey, who's invited to the table? Who eats with us? Why are you excluding people? What have you?" He'll go a lot into cultural and social equality. And in this one, I think he shows an interesting, and I've never really looked at it this way, but he shows an interesting financial equality for me with what was water, albeit ceremonial washing water, so maybe not just regular, not like hose water or something, but it, at least he then turns that into, essentially turns that into money, essentially turns that into something with value, which has a deeper connotation than money, but it's just interesting to me to the market kind of equality that God creates, be it with people, be it with anything. Hey, all of a sudden, because you're mine, because you're what God has, so whether it's in your recovery or whatever, you're valuable at this point. I like how sometimes that comes through in the stories of the gospel. Valuable.
Yeah, I think you're onto something I want to elaborate on here in a minute, but anybody else, what jumps out at you?
I feel for me that, through the character through the transformation,
my character, finding that I do have an identity, the renewal, it's like building a house. It's hard work. It's opening up a lot in my heart, a lot in my mind. As we talked about today, engaging people, opening myself up to building new friends, relationships, spreading the love instead of the hate, instead of just the negative, the really negative. But, I really appreciate this journey and the journey I'm on, because it's how would you say it, predestined. I think I don't know if that'd be a good word, but predestined to the fact that I wasn't an accident to be here. I was. As we talked about purpose.
I appreciate you saying that. I've said for years, I don't think there's anybody that's come to Neighbors of Hope, even back when we were known as Lenawee County Mission. They come knocking on our door that they may have believed they were seeking assistance and all these other things, but I think God leads them to us. What they do is this: once they're with us, is the same thing we all do once we encounter God. You're going to take advantage of that. You're going to change. You're going to transform. Or are you going back the same way you came? You're still going to try and be the master of your own creation. It's the same invitation. So I appreciate you recognizing that. And we do see Jesus with this transforming of water into wine. So there is part of this invitation to transformation taking place here. Anybody else got anything they want to add?
I think too, it's, I like to, I guess, like point out with Mary, the mother, mother of Jesus. It's like her also.
I was thinking of you.
Like her renewal and faith in God, because she knew that it was his time. It was Jesus' time to be introduced to the world for his purpose. So she said, she's like, in the sense context, it's like, you can do it. I know you can do it. So, and just left it at that. Like, it's your turn to do this. And even though some in today's world we kind of use some of this language, we take it as negativity when he says, after that, mother, it says, woman. That was just a reference. It's really his reference saying that our relationship has changed.
Yeah.
You're not my mother anymore, because he's now a new person. He's being introduced, coming to be the bride and the groom to the world.
Good insight. Excellent insight. Yeah, I mean, that's John's perspective of Mary is, I mean, it obviously has overlaps to the synoptics, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. So we get, I like Luke's, our Advent stories about Mary and Elizabeth and what have you. In that one line of that Luke has, Mary encountering the angel, let it be done unto me according to your will. All right, and we talk about throughout the history of the church, as Theodokos, as Mary becomes the God-bearer. And then I challenge all of us, how much Theotokos is in us? How much are we bearing God? Right. John runs with that and actually expounds on that to where, before we went on the air, we were talking about sometimes mothers have interesting ways, right, with that maternal love that they have. And you do have this idea, she approaches him, hey, son, you need to help us out here, right? And you're right, there he does recognize that, biologically, so to speak, you're my mother, right? But at the same time, our relationship is changing because of where I am, right? But I do find it interesting, you know, he kind of pushes back, it's not my hour. And she just walks away. She tells him what to do and walks away, and then he does what mama says. Does his dad, right? So, so there's that perspective of Mary kind of having, look, I've carried you for 9 months. I've raised you for 30 years now. Mama says your time has come.
But that's like a wedding, right? Like a traditional wedding, you know.
Which
it's that release, it's that celebration that you as man and wife together. Like it's like that concept that it's like you into the community now. And that's the whole thing with the wine. The wine's such an important thing because if you run out of wine back then, you're disgraced in the community. It's very, it's all about culture. It's all about the culture context.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, and we do, you know, for our listening audience as well, we do have to appreciate the Jewishness of this wedding, okay. Right? And I mean, these things, the three parts to a Jewish marriage, you have what we like to call the betrothal, or Kiddush is this three parts. And there has to, so there's kind of what we would call, you kind of have to have the love between you going on here, right? You got this attraction to one another and all that kind of stuff. And then you'd have to have some sort of exchange. Back then they'd call it dowry, right? There has to be an exchange of value. I mean, today we call it the engagement ring, right? So we still kind of practice the same thing. You got these feelings for each other and finally have a proposal, right? There's exchange of something of value. It's an engagement ring. And then the wedding, the celebration of what's already existing, comes at a later date. Same type of format, right? And sometimes at later date, you know, where they actually have the ceremony to celebrate what their God's already done in that couple, is much later. That was a community celebration, right? Even, you know, in our contemporary ways of weddings, we invite families and friends, and some of those are closer relationships than others. And some of these weddings, if you've been to them, they can get quite large. You know, you got 200-400 people, right? That's a lot of celebration. And so there is this moment of celebration taking place. It is a celebration, just the wedding itself, but we talk about marriage as a premier metaphor of our relationship with God in the Bible. So here is Jesus at this ceremony that is communal. It is interesting that these empty jars are ceremonial jars. That's a pretty good insight to who, either that's the father of the groom, perhaps, or the groom themselves, but there's this relationship to either a synagogue, a temple, some sort of cleansing rituals that the Jews would participate in. And understand, kind of at that time when Jesus shows up on the scene, you're considered holy when you're clean. All right, the ceremonial water is how you clean yourself. So before you went into the temple, before you went into the synagogue, depending, you know, if you were female and you're menstruating or something, you have to go in the pool. All of a sudden, the Hebrew words, as he lifts me here, to cleanse yourself before you went in the temple or the synagogue. If you're washing, right, you wash your hands twice: one to get the dirt off, two to get the residue off, and you let them drip dry. It's about this idea we didn't participate in eating, we didn't participate in worship without making ourselves clean. So we're considered holy when we're clean. I'm fascinated that those are the jars Jesus chooses to transform. All right, well, thank you very much for sharing with us on this edition of Word Made Flesh. Until we meet again, may God's grace, peace, love, and joy be with you all.
Thank you for listening to Word Made Flesh. Neighbors of Hope brings people hope through a comprehensive suite of Christ-centered programs that include the Men's Ministry, Blessings and More Resale Store, our Third Day Farm Project, Fishes and Loaves Food Pantry, and of course our radio ministry, Word Made Flesh. We're also in the process of establishing a women's and children's transitional housing program. Find out how you can become a Neighbor of Hope at neighborsofhope.com. And please join us again next Sunday morning for Word Made Flesh.